Who can provide what health services? Developments in a Changing Landscape, Part 2, Stephen Mendelson. Editor's note. Our household is batting 500. My own fall editorial raised quite a controversy, but the first part of Steve's article got rave reviews, so without further ado, we end the suspense. Page 21. So, what did the Supreme Court decide? In summary, it decided that where parents requested and the child's treating physician authorized insulin administration by school personnel, the actions of those personnel came under the physician-directed exception provisions of the Education Code and therefore were lawful. So far as the unauthorized practice of nursing claim was concerned, the court concluded that the NPA concerned itself here not with any particular action or treatment, such as administering insulin, but with whether unlicensed persons held themselves out as or claimed to be nurses. That was not the issue here, because the school personnel in question made no such claim. In the court's view, the authorizing statute, section 49423 of the Education Code, was clear, so there was no need to reach the nurses' other contentions, such as that in adopting the legal advisory, the Department of Education had exceeded its statutory authority. If the statute had been unclear, then the issue might have shifted to whether an agency like the Department of Education had the authority under the law to adopt this sort of regulation, whether such legislative power had been delegated to it. But since the authority for the injections came directly from the statute, the regulation's validity and indeed the subsidiary question of whether the legal advisory constituted an official regulation at all dropped out of the case. Page 22. The court's decision eliminated another issue from the case as well. The supporters of non-nurse insulin injection had argued that even if state law did not permit non-nurses to administer insulin, federal civil rights and education laws did. They argued that such laws should preempt, that is, take precedence over the state law. If the court had interpreted state law as not allowing the insulin administration, then the court would have had to go on to consider this preemption issue. Since the decision on preemption would have involved interpretation of federal law, the likelihood is that whichever side lost would have appealed to the federal courts. But since the court reached its decision solely on the basis of its interpretation and application of state law, and since there is no appeal from a state's high court on an interpretation of state law, the case is finally over. Possibly, if the court had ruled against the insulin administration, but then gone on to hold that preemption was not applicable, the pro-injection group might still have tried to go back into federal court on the preemption issue. But fortunately, this was not necessary. Page 23. Now that we have followed the labyrinthian course of this important case, the question of its implications emerges as key. As important as the decision is for the estimated 14,000 California public school students with diabetes, its ultimate significance, like that of almost all major court decisions, will ultimately be knowable only over time, as other courts rely on it, reject it, or ignore it, in considering the issues noted above, as legislatures address cost and practice issues surrounding a variety of treatments and services, and as public and private insurers update their reimbursement policies as to who can be compensated for providing what services and in what settings. Naturally, consideration of the ruling's implications must begin with the text of the decision itself. Accordingly, it is important to make clear that the state Supreme Court did not offer a blanket endorsement of the right of non-medical school personnel to administer injections. In distinguishing insulin from other medications, the court noted a number of statutes restricting the administration of certain controlled substances and emergency medications in schools, and specifying the specialized training that would be required of personnel who are allowed to administer these drugs. Page 24. But in the absence of any provision of law expressly controlling or limiting the administration of a medication or drug to students, the court is probably telling us that where there is parental approval and physician direction, and especially where the physician or parents have identified the personnel in question, the law will allow non-nursing, non-healthcare school personnel to administer the necessary medications. But where any statute requires a different result for a particular drug or class of drugs, the terms of that statute will, as they should, control. But nowhere will lay personnel be permitted to hold themselves out or assume the role of nurses or of other health care practitioners, as long as who they are and who they are not is clear, what they do is the issue on which the law will focus. Still, there's little consistency among statutes in terms of which services require nurses, doctors, or other licensed health care providers to perform them and which do not, as well as to where and when. The decision points away to a case-by-case, situation-by-situation process and gives little overall guidance. What the decision should prompt is a thoroughgoing legislative review of all such requirements to create more general rules. Page 25, that review should begin with the question of which procedures or treatments are of such a nature as to be safely or appropriately administered only by a designated health care practitioner, and of course by what kind or range of practitioners. Probably any injection that can safely be self-administered should be appropriate for administration by a layperson as well. But of course, there will always be types of medications, such as controlled substances, emergency antidotes, drugs likely to provoke dangerous or unpredictable reactions, or others that no one would want to be administered by non-professional personnel. To say that certain injectables can legally be administered by laypersons is not, of course, to say that they can be administered by anyone at any time. The legislative review must also, therefore, consider the training and supervision that will be required. But as a recent debate over expansion of nurse practice illustrates, these questions of supervision, in this case by doctors, inevitably become part of the jurisdictional dispute. And since lay people have no professional organizations, trade associations, or lobbyists to advocate for them, they are likely to lose out, even against cost savings arguments, in cases where the practice rights and income streams of various health care disciplines are in any way challenged. Page 26. Still, in the end, the payers hold the whip hand, if, as they are increasingly likely to do, that is, insurance companies, including Medicare, Medicaid, and private managed care providers decide that reducing costs is their primary imperative. They have means of substituting lower for higher paid personnel in the delivery of all manner of services, no matter what legislatures say. Mostly, these cost-saving measures are likely to involve substitution with or without on-site or other direct physician supervision of lower-paid for higher-paid health care professionals, but in some cases they're likely to go farther, especially in home and long-term care settings, where administration of medication by lay employees, whether legal or not, is reputedly already quite common. Consumers face this prospect warily, because while it does bode some reduction of cost and some broadened access to needed services, it also raises questions of quality and accountability. On balance, consumer choice should be encouraged, but that choice must be informed choice as to the implications of the modality, as to the alternatives, and as to the skill and experience of the provider, whether possessed of a professional credential or not. These are not new issues for people who supplement their conventional health care, or LTSS, long-term services and supports, through recourse to alternative medicine of one kind or another. It will certainly become an issue for many more people in the turbulent health and LTSS era to come.